Okay, we're going to start here at the bottom of Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Bet with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is really brought agav because of other things that were mentioned in the Perek and a style that is used, not necessarily relevant to the topics that we've been discussing, but format-wise, it's something that is obviously of interest, which is Chomer b'chelev mi bedam, Chomer midam mi b'chelev. There are certain things where chelev, the fats that are restricted in the animal, are more chamur then the restrictions required by dam. And the same thing, by dam, chomer v'dam, by blood, there are certain restrictions or issues that are more chamur, more stringent than we find by chelev, by fat. Chomer b'chelev, so what are those? Where does chelev have astringencies that do not apply to dam? She'achelev mo'alim bo. First of all, chelev, you can have a chiyuv mi'ila. Chiyuv mi'ila means when someone misappropriates hekdesh, something that otherwise belongs to Shemaim, something that otherwise belongs to Kodesh, and is misappropriated, then one is in violation of Mi'ilah. Mi'ilah can apply to Chelev, can apply to the fats, but that is not true by the Dam. V'chayevin ala mishum pigul, notar b'tamei. These dinim, which are applied by Kodeshim, do have application by Chelev. Pigul, someone has in mind to bring the Korban chutz lizmano, or obviously chutz limkomo would also have application here. Vinotar, anything that's left over from a korban past the time period in which it was allowed to be consumed. Vitamei, someone who is tamei is restricted from, someone who's tumata guf, someone themselves is tamei is restricted from eating kodesh. That applies to kodesh, all these items by the kodesh. Chelev is also within that category, and therefore one could be in violation of pigul, notar, and tamei when they consume chelev. And they can also be in violation of mi'ilah if they use or consume that chelev. Mashen kein b'dam. This is not true by blood. The Gemara will learn out why that is the case. B'chomer b'adam. Dam also has stringency. Sh'adam noheg b'behema chaya ba'uf. It's irrelevant what type of animal we're speaking about, whether it's an animal, a wild animal, a bird. All of them have the application or an isur of blood. Bent meyim, bent marim. Whether they're kosher or non-kosher, the restriction against consuming blood applies to all. V'chelev, eno noheg ela behema torah bilvad. When it comes to the fats are only restricted in a kosher animal. And that is because they would otherwise go on the mizbeach. It's items that would otherwise go on the mizbeach. Since they would go on the mizbeach in a kodoshim sense, therefore in chulin, they are restricted from being consumed. And that's only applicable by behema torah. The only thing that ends up on the Mizbeach is a kosher animal. So now, Mahani Mile, how do we know? Everything that we've laid out in our Mishnah, the Gemara is now going to ask, how do we know that this Chelev has these Chumrot, first of all, that Mi'ila applies to it? Amar Rabbi Yanai, Amar Kral, the Pasuk says, Kasher Yuram Mishor Zevach HaShilamim. When it comes to the Chatat of the Par Kohen Mashiach, it's in Vayikra Dalet, it's one of the Chataot that is enumerated there, a Kohen Gadol, that does an aveira that a layperson would bring a korban chatat for. The Kohen Gadol has a par Kohen Mashiach. He has a particular par that is brought. We dealt with that in the Gemara in Horiot, exactly what the requirements are for him to be in violation and to have to bring this korban. But in terms of bringing that korban, it says about the fats of the korban, which fats are brought from the korban. It says, Kasher Yuram Mishor Zevach HaShlamim. The same fats that were taken off of a korban shlamim are also taken off of the Par Kohen Mashiach. So now the Gemara says, "V'chi malamadu mishor zevach shlamim me'ata." So what do you learn out from shor zevach shlamim? That we know is which fats this is applicable to. Me'ata hareze ba lilamed. This came to teach, meaning that shlamim came to teach us something about the Par Kohen Mashiach. The shlamim teaches us which fats from the Par Kohen Mashiach. V'nimtza lamed. But it also learns something. It's a two-way street. That the hekesh that's created here, the connection between the shlamim and the Par Kohen Mashiach, it turns out to be a two-way street. The pashtuta pasuk is that we're trying to learn something about the Par Kohen Mashiach from the shlamim, which is that which fats have to be placed on the mizbeach. But in the interim, or basically in that process, it also ends up learning something from Par Kohen Mashiach. I mean, Par Kohen Mashiach teaches us something about a shlamim. And that is, Mekish Shor Zevach HaShlamim, the Par Kohen Mashiach. There's a Hekesh. A Hekesh being that there's some sort of connection now that we draw between the Shlamim and the Par Kohen Mashiach, that certain dinim will be applicable in both. Mak Par Kohen Mashiach Yeshbo Mi'ilah. Just like the Par Kohen Mashiach has Mi'ilah applicable to it, Avshor Zevach Shlamim, yesh bo mila. So too, the Shor Zevach HaShlamim will have mila applicable to it. Now, of course, the pasuk is, the context of the pasuk is talking about the fats. So the fats of the Shlamim will have mila be applicable to them. And that's important, because by a Shlamim, as we know, they're Kodshei Kalim. They are not the Kodshei Kodashim. And therefore, the meats belong to the Balim. There are certain parts of it that belong to the Kohen, and a portion goes on to the Mizbeach. A portion that goes on to the Mizbeach, aside from the Dam, is the Chelev, are the fats that end up on the Mizbeach. Now those fats are unique or different than the remainder of the Kodshei Kalim. When it comes to Kodshei Kalim, there is no Mi'ilah by them because they are Mamon Balim. They belong to the owner. There is nothing about, until the point when they reach the Mizbeach, they are as if they are in private ownership. When they're brought in the Mizbeach, then something happens. When you sprinkle the blood, the basar, the flesh, goes to the Balim, those that brought it, and they can eat it. There's certain parts of that go to the Kohen as a gift. And then the Chelev, the fats, end up on the Mizbeach. Those fats that are on the Mizbeach then become what's called Kodshei Hashem. They take on the character of what would be by Kodshei Kodoshim. Kodshei Kodoshim, for instance, a person is Magdish, a Chatat, an Olah. They become Asur, Behana'ab, and they have a restriction of Mi'ilah on them immediately because they are Kodshei Kodoshim. And then since they belong to the Mizbeach in their entirety, basically, they become Kodshei Kodoshim right away. Over here, by Kodshim Kalim, it's not the case. They're not belonging to Hashem, they belong to the Balim, and they don't have a restriction of Mi'ilah. That changes at the moment that the Dam is sprinkled on the Mizbeach. There's a change in the Shlamim, that one portion of it now belongs to the Mizbeach, belongs to Hashem, and it will take on the character of the Kodshei Kodashim. It will take on the character of the Parkoin Mashiach, and that are the those are the fats that end up in the Mizbeach. And that's what the Gemara is teaching us here. That is what we learn here.
That's the Kiddush from
this Hekesh that we have between Parkoin Mashiach and the Shlamim.
We wouldn't have thought that otherwise?
Because the Kodashim Kalim have no Shaykhut to Mi'ilah, so we'd have thought that they have no, they're not even in the Parsha of Mi'ilah. So this brings the fats into the parsha of Me'ilah. So that's it. The idea being that the Shlamim come to teach us about which fats from the Parkoin Mashiach are put on the Mizbeach, but the Parkoin Mashiach also teaches us something about Shlamim, which is those same fats in the Kodshim Kalim, in the Shlamim, have a restriction of Me'ilah that is associated with them. So Amalei Rabbi Chanina says to Rabbi Yanai, Ki Ura Zushishana Rabbi, so we just had this back on the Kuftet Vavim Bet, the limud that Rabbi made or gave for this explanation of why there is mi'ilah by the fats of the Kodshei Kalim, that wasn't good enough for you? That wasn't clean enough for you to use? Why did you have to come up with another pasuk? What is it that Rabbi said? Because Rabbi said, Kol Chelev Lashem. So Kol Chelev Lashem, the Rabot Imurei Kodshim Kalim. The Kol is a ribui. It says all fats. So it's not just the fats of the Kodshei Kodashim that are restricted, but even Kol Chelev, even the Kodshim Kalim, Lemi'ilah. So Rabbi has a limud from the word Kol, or ribui from the word Kol. So if that's the case, why did Rabbi Yanai, what are you coming up with a whole nother limud from the Hekesh? So Rabbaye Itzrich, we need both psukim. Di Kotav Rachmana Chelev, had the pasuk just written Kol Chelev, Havamina Chelevin, it's only referencing the fats themselves. Yoteret, which is really the Yoteret HaKaved, Ushtekayot Lo. Not only are the fats placed on Mizbeach, when the Torah prescribes what goes on the Mizbeach, it's not solely the fats. There is a greater portion that goes on. And with that go the Shtekayot, the two kidneys, and the Yoteret, which is in English the Kaul, the C-A-U-L, which is the Yoteret HaKaved, the additional part of the liver. But that, those extra pieces, they are put on the Mizbeach along with the fats. So had my limud for Me'ilah only been from the word Chelev and Kol, Kol means all fats. But that would only include fats. It would not include these additional items that surround the fats that are brought with them, but are not fats. So therefore, Kadar Rachmano Kasher Yuram. That says, the Pasuk that says Kasher Yuram is anything taken out of the Shlamim and put on the Mizbeach. Well, anything taken out is not just the fats. That includes the Shtei HaKlayot and the Yoteret HaKaveh. So that tells us there's Mi'ilah there. V'ikotav Rachmana Kasher Yuram, had the Pasuk only taught us, or the Torah only taught us the Pasuk of Kasher Yuram, Havamina Chelev Al Yo, Deleta Bishor, Vo. So I would have thought that the fats that apply here are only fats that are applicable by all animals. There is the chelev halyoh, the fats of the tail. The fats of the tail are only applicable by a kesev, by the sheep. That's not applicable by the shore. And since it doesn't have application by the shore, I would think that that does not have a din of me'ila on it. So kata rachmana, kol chelev. The Torah then comes and says, kol chelev, to include even chelev that's not applicable by a shore. And that's because the par kohen mashiach is a par. A par does not have the requirement of chelev aliyah, the fats of the tail to be placed on a mizbeach. So I would have thought if I just learned it out from that context in which it's the par kohen mashiach, then the fats of the aliyah, which are applicable by the kesev, by the sheep, would not have any restriction of me'ilah. So along comes the pasuk of kol chelev, katav kamana kol chelev, to tell me all fats that end up on mizbeach, whether they're the fats that apply to a par or a shor, or whether the fats that apply to a kesef or an ez, that they all have the restriction of mi'ilah. So amale Rabbi Mari the Rav Zvid, I al yo ikre chelev. If the fats of the tail are now under the context or the term chelev, then titaser ba'achila. Why aren't they restricted in eating and being consumed? That's what we discussed before, that the chelev that ends up on the mizbeach is, God bless you, the chelev that ends up on the mizbeach is the chelev that is what we are restricted from eating. In any behemah, you shech the behemah today, a behemah Torah, you're not allowed to eat the fats, those are the fats that end up on the mizbeach. If they're called chelev, you can't eat them. Well, you just said now that the word chelev includes even chelev aliyah, even includes the fats of the tail. If that's the case, then why are we allowed to consume the fats of the tail? They should be under that same restriction of eating chelev, even in the chulin. So malei alecha makra pasuk, when it comes to restrict the fats that we can eat in chulin, it says kol chelev shor v'kesef ve'ez. So the Torah, when it lays out the fats that are restricted, it lays out all the animals, the kosher animals, the behemot, which are shor, kesef, and ez, an ox, a cow. Kesef is a sheep, a lamb, and then the ez is the goat, kid. All of these are restricted, but that means that it has to be something that is common to all of them. And that is the Zavar HaShaveh B'Shor V'Kesev Eiz. Only fats that are shared amongst all of these animals will be restricted, but not any fat that is only particular to one animal. So even though, yes, in Ochanami it's called Chelev, and therefore it has a restriction of Mi'ilah, nevertheless it's not under the restriction of fats that can be eaten by Chulin, because by Chulin there's an additional requirement that the fats be common to all animals. And the fats of the tail are not common to all animals. They're not included in the shor, and therefore they'll be excluded over here. Rav Ashi Amar, it says, Chelbo aliyah ikre, chelev stam alo ikre. He says that the chelev of the tail is not called just fat. It's called the fat of the tail. It's always modified by halyah. So therefore, it's not chelev that would be restricted in eating, because what's restricted in eating is chelev, just fats. Not fats that is modified by something else. Chelbo aliyah ikre, chelvo stama lo ikre. Elomiato. If that's the case, lo yimaluba. He says, wait a minute. If you're going to go down that path, then if the word chelev is not used by chelev aliyah, then you couldn't include it in the chelev as included under the restriction of mi'ilah. Because the restriction of mi'ilah is only written by the word chelev also, by itself. So the Gemara says, "Elamachavarta kid Rav Zvid." Rav Ashi's limud is not going to work here, and we have to go back to what Rav Zvid said. Rav Zvid said that the pasuk by the restriction of chelev by chulin includes all three animals, and all three animals means chelev that is common to all three animals. So that teaches us the din of mi'ilah that is applicable by chelev. Now the Gemara says, "Mashen kein bedam." The Mishnah says that's not applicable by dam. Why is it by dam that there is no mi'ilah? Nahane mile. Samarula damakra. The pasuk says, lachem, shelachem yehei. By the dam, it says that it'll be for you. For you means that it's yours. Yours for your own usage. For your own personal usage means that hekdesh has no hold on it, has no rights over it, and therefore there can't be a misappropriation of the blood because it's yours. Vei Rabbi Shmuel Tano, we have another pasuk from the Bein Rishon, which says, lechaper. By the blood, it says, the reason you can't eat the blood is because the dam hua nefesh, the life force of the animal is in the blood, but that also means that the reason that the blood is put on the mizbeach is because the life force of the animal is in the blood. And that's why it ends up in the mizbeach. So what is the purpose of the blood? The purpose of the blood is the chaper. lechaparanitativ, I gave you the blood in order to use it for atonement, velo lemi'ila, but not to be under the restriction of misappropriation of hekdesh. Yochanan amakra, we have a third pasuk, who? So it says about the blood that it's who? Who? Lifnei kapara, kalachar kapara. That the status of blood before its mitzvah has been done is the same as its status after the mitzvah is done. Malachar kapara in bo mi'ila, just like after it's been sprinkled on the mizbeach, there is no mi'ila. Af lifnei kapara ein bo mi'ila. So too, before the kapara is executed, it also is no mi'ila. And that's from the word hu, behaviato yehe, that its status remains stable. It never changes. Its status never changes. Just like afterwards there's no mi'ila, so too before there is no mi'ila. And the Gemara says, how do you know to go in that direction? Ve'ema, go in the other direction. Hu, ve'achar kapara kelifnei kapara. Why don't we say it this way? Just like before kapara, before the atonement is attained, the blood will have a restriction of mi'ila, so too after. Malifnei kapara yeshvo mi'ila, aflachar kapara yeshvo mi'ila. How do you know which direction to take the limun in? I know that the Haviato Yehei says that the dam, the blood remains in a stable condition. The stable condition means it doesn't change. How do I know which way it doesn't change? How do I know that the status should be no mi'ila? Why don't I say the status should be yes mi'ila and it won't change? So to that, the Gemara has an answer, which is, Ein lecha davar she'nase mitzvato umo'olim bo. It's a principle in mi'ila, which is that there's only a problem of misappropriation of hekdesh before the mitzvah is executed on that item. Once the mitzvah is carried out on that item, there is no longer an issue of mi'ila, for obvious reasons. Once you've done what's supposed to be done with that item, hekdesh doesn't need it anymore. It's not a misappropriation of hekdesh anymore because the mitzvah has been completed. So therefore, we're certain that after the dam is sprinkled on the mizbeach, there is no mi'ila. There's no mi'ila because the mitzvah is already done. So if we're certain about that part, and we know that the condition is stable, it must be that beforehand also, there is no mi'ila. The mi'ila. He's learning as a miut. A miut is that I gave it to the kapara netativ, that I gave it to you to use for kapara, and there'll be no other restrictions involved in it. There are no other restrictions or necessities about this blood. As Rashi writes it, he says, "Velo she karui shali." It's not mine. God says, I gave it to you to do kapara. It means it's yours to do it, and therefore it's not mine. So it says, the kapara lechem, for you to use as a kapara, so it becomes like your personal blood. And therefore, it's not that God owns it and you're misappropriating it. It's yours. I mean, not that you can do everything you want with it. You do have to execute the kapara, but yes, it's not in God's possession that you could misappropriate it in that way. We have three limudim. We'll get back to why we need all three, what we're going to do with the psukim. Now the Gemara is going to challenge this position that once a mitzvah is done, there is no mi'ila. Velo, is that really true? V'ayri trumat ha-deshen, d'na'ase mitzvato u'molim bo. Trumat HaDeshen is the removal of the ashes from the Mizbeach each morning. They took the ashes, or a pile of the ashes off the Mizbeach each morning and placed it next to the Mizbeach. That's a requirement. It's in the Karbanot that we read every morning in Davening, if you say the Karbanot. One of them is the Trumat HaDeshen is one of the Parshiot that we read, which is the removal of the ashes from the Mizbeach and placement next to the Mizbeach. Over there, the mitzvah is to take the ashes off the Mizbeach and place them next to the Mizbeach. So the mitzvah is completed, and yet, if one misappropriates, one uses those ashes, he's in violation of mi'ila. So here we have a situation in which the mitzvah is done, and yet there still is mi'ila. Nase mitzvato molimbo dichtiv, because it says there, v'samo etzel mizbeach. You place it next to the mizbeach. So the Gemara says, no, you don't have no proof from that. Mishum, davei trumata deshen, uvig de kihuna, shnei ketuvim habaim keechad. We have two psukim, which specify the fact that there is mi'ila, or there is a requirement of not misappropriating them, even after they've been used. Even after they've been used and they're finished, you still are not allowed to get any hana from them, or you're not allowed to use them for personal benefit. But to give some background to this, in general, if you want to have something be a paradigm for the rest of the Torah should only write it once. If a Torah writes something once, then we assume that that item is a paradigm for everything else. Once the Torah writes something twice in two different mitzvot, we assume that it's not creating a paradigm, but rather it's giving you the exceptions. Because if it wanted to give you a paradigm, it would have written it once, and then we would have applied it to everything else. That's one of the rules that we darsh in the Torah, that we have a din by specific mitzvah, then we can apply it broadly to other mitzvot. But once I write it by multiple mitzvot, I'm already telling you that this is the exception to the rule, not the paradigm. So over here I have two places where the Torah has this rule, which is that even after the mitzvah is done, there still is a problem with it. And that is by Trumat HaDeshen is one, and Big Day Kahuna is the other one, which is passed as by Yom HaKippurim. By Yom HaKippurim, it says that the Kohen Gadol's Big Adim or Big Day Kahuna that are used, they have to wear, otherwise be placed into Geniza after you finish with them. So since you are not allowed to get benefit from those Big Day Kahuna after they are used, there's another item where the mitzvah is completed, and yet there's still a restriction against getting benefit from them, or have there's a restriction of Mili, you have to put them into Geniza. So those become the exceptions, right? There's Shnei Keduvim Abayim Kechad, two psukim that teach you the same rule, and that means, V'chol Shnei Keduvim Abayim Kechad, Eim Melamdim. They no longer become a paradigm. They become the exception to the rule, not the paradigm. And therefore everything else will have the rule, which is that once the mitzvah is done, there is no mi'ila. Anicha the Rabbanan, that works well according to Rabbanan de Amre, ve'nicham sham. By the pasuk in Achrei Mot, that we read by Yom HaKippurim, that when it says ve'nicham sham, about the big day Kohen Gadol, means that you gotta leave them there, and they have to put in Geniza, that you can't get any benefit from them. That works. Ma'amei Shatunim Geniza. Ela Rabbi Dosa, about what that means, v'nicham sham, who says, damar, shalo yishtamesh behem liyom kapurim acher. V'nicham sham is not a restriction against Mila. It's not a restriction that they have to go into Geniza, but rather, just a limitation. You can use them on this Yom Kippur, but you can't use them for another Yom Kippur. Doesn't mean that you can't use them again. Doesn't mean they can't be put into use again. Just means you can't use them on another Yom Kippur. So then he doesn't have two psukim giving you the exception. Ma'ika the Meimar. Ela mishum da'ave, Trumat HaDeshen, ve'ego arufa, shnei ketuvim kabayim kechad. I have another exception to the rule. There's a third exception to the rule, which is, v'chol shnei ketuvim kabayim kechad im melamdim. So I have three exceptions to the rule, but according to different opinions, it won't turn out to be three, it'll only turn out to be two exceptions, because it depends how you read v'nicham sham by the Kohen Gadol. The Gemara is more extensive in other places, and there it talks about that works well according to the one who says that when you have two exceptions, im melamdim. But there's somebody who says that you only do it with three times, you have an exception. Here we have the three, which are, you have Mi'ila, Big Day Kuna, and Egla Arufa, which are the three exceptions to the rule. So Gemara says, Anich lamandamar im melamdim. Elamandamar melamdim, aikam eimar. What are you going to do according to the one who says they are melamed? Meaning that here you have someone who says that two psukim are enough to call it the exception to the rule and not the paradigm. There's one who says you need three to be the exception and not a paradigm. So what are you going to say according to him? According to him, in Rabbi Dosa. According to the Rabbanan, I don't have a problem. I have three areas where I say that there is exception rule. So I can have three if I hold like the Rabbanan. If I hold like the Rabbanan, I have Trumat HaDeshen, Big Day Kahuna, and Egla Arufa. Problem is for Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa who says Big Day Kahuna don't apply, I only have two.
So with three, the same halacha of Eim Melamdim.
So according to this, everybody holds at least, but when you have three, for sure it's not Melamdim. Question is by two, is that enough to be called an exception, not a paradigm? According to one who says the Melamdim, that they are considered a paradigm and not an exception, Michael Meimar, so he says, Trei Me'ute. There's two specific exceptions written here. K'tive, Ha'achaktiv, over here it says Vissamo, and Ha'atam K'tiv, Ha'arufa. So when we say they, right, Afilu L'mando Amar Ma'alma Melamdim, even according to one who says in general when you have two exceptions to the rule, that's still considered a paradigm, not an exception. Ha'ani Eim Melamdim, Dimi'ute K'tibu. They have limiting statements in them, which is these and nothing else. When it says "vis samo etzel mizbeach," it says this has that din of samo etzel mizbeach and nothing else. Egla rufa too. It says ha'arufa, only ha'arufa has this din and nothing else. So in addition to them being exceptions to the rule, they also have a limiting factor or something that's written in them that says them and nothing else. So even though in general he would hold that two is not enough, over here, he'll say two is enough to be an exception, not a paradigm, because not only do you have them being exceptions, you also have language that limits you to this din, in particular to these items. Now, the Gemara goes back to Tzvate Krai Lamali. Before, we had three different limudim as to why Dam is the exception to the rule. We had Lachem, Shelachem Yehei. We had Tanei Rabbi Shmuel, which is Lechapara, Netativ. I gave it to you, Lechaper, and you're not to anything else. Not to Me'ilah. And we had the last one, which was who? That there's a stable, blood is always in a stable form. And we said, just like after Kapara, there's no Me'ilah, so too before there's no Kapara. Why do I need all three of them? That Gemara says, Chad, the Me'ute mi Notar, Chad, the Me'ute mi Me'ilah, V'chad, the Me'ute mi Tumah. In the Mishnah, I had Dam be an exception to a number of rules. I said that Chelev applies in the Mishnah to Me'ilah, Pigol, Notar, and Tameh. Well, how do I know blood is accepted from all those rules? So I use one of them to accept mi'ila, And now I have two other psukim. One is Lemeute Notar, and one is Lemeute Tuma. So I have the pasuk. Each one of these psukim will say, Dam has a din of not consuming Dam, but not some other din. What's that other din? One time it's Mi'ila, meaning that's yours and not for Hashem's. It doesn't belong in Hashem's possession. It's yours, and there'll be no restriction, additional restriction of Tuma. If you have Tuma Taguf, and then you drink the blood, you'll only have a restriction of blood, not a restriction of Tuma Taguf. Notar. If it's left over from the animal, you'll have no notar. Din of notar. Just a rule that you're not allowed to drink the blood. What about pigul? There are four items that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Here I only have three exceptions. What about the fact that pigul? How do we know that blood's not included in pigul? That comes from the ikar din, the etzem din of pigul cannot apply to dam. And that's because we learned this together. Remember we learned in Zvachim and Menachot, whenever we did with pigul, there are certain rules about pigul, which is, lo tzarich kra detnan. The Mishnah says that kol sheyesh lo matirim ben la'adam ben la'mizbeach chayvelim v'la b'shum pigul. In order to be chayav pigul, you need something that is matir it to go on the mizbeach. It has to be something else that allows you to be eaten. So, for instance, it's very easy. Babasar and chalef, the dam going on the mizbeach permits the meat to be consumed, and it permits the chalef to be placed on the mizbeach. So therefore, since there's an achilah by them, and there's a matir of dam, you can have pigul by the basar, you can have pigul by the chalef. That's not true by the dam itself. What is matir the dam to go on the mizbeach? Nothing. It is matir itself. There is nothing else that permits the dam to get on the mizbeach. The dam itself is what goes on the mizbeach, and it's matir itself. So dam gufe matiru. Since it is a matir, pigul is not applicable by dam. So dam's an exception to the rule of pigul, not because we need a miut, but because it doesn't fit into the din of pigul, because the din of pigul requires a matir, something else that allows you then to go on the mizbeach, allows you to be consumed. And that's not true by dam. So therefore, we have four dinim that apply by chelev that do not apply by dam. The reason they don't apply by dam, pigul, is because it doesn't fit into the conditions that make something pigul. By notar, tamei, and mi'ila, we have three psukim of exception that say dam does not have the din. That's how we use it to exclude it. And chelev, the reason that chelev has the din applied to it is we brought that before. We had two psukim that taught us that, kol chelev, and also kasher yuram. And between those two psukim, we learned that all fats that would otherwise end up on the mizbeach will also have a din of mi'ila that applies to them, even by kochei kalim, even by items that don't have any melila to them, when they become accessible to the mizbeach, when the dam is sprinkled on the mizbeach, and then they belong to the mizbeach, they also have a din of mi'ila that applies to them. And that's the summary of the sugya. All right, so now we have the new perek. The new perek here is, according to the Me'iri, supposed to be the last perek in the Masechta. The reason it's not last perek in the Masechta is because it deals with tumah and items that are not exactly of the nicest form, and the Masechta always likes to end off on a high note. So therefore, the last perek is Shiluach HaKein instead, which becomes the last perek, which is something with L'man Yerichu Yamecha, that if you do it, you'll get a long life. So they want to end off on a positive note, and therefore it's over there. What's this perek doing over here? This perek is actually a continuation of something that we saw in Perek Dalet. I mentioned a number of times when we were learning Perek Dalet, don't worry, we're coming back to this, that we dealt with Inyanei Tumah. And I said, now we pass the Inyanei Tumah, we're going to get back to it later in the Masechta. That's because of this parak. This parak goes back to something we learned in Parak Dalet. Parak Dalet, the Mishnah spoke about Tumat Nevelot and Tumat Ochlim, that it doesn't apply to a fetus. This is what comes back now to discuss or continue that train of thought. What happened in between? In between, we went off on a lot of tangents. Once we got involved with the fetus, we dealt with Otov Yad Beno, which deals with the fetus. Once we dealt with Otov Yad Beno, but then we dealt with Gidon Asher. Gidon Asher, which doesn't necessarily apply to a fetus. Then once we got to Gidon Asher, which had a din of Tarovet involved with it, we got into Basar Bechalav, which is also a din in Tarovet. So we had all these tangents that played out from Perek Dalet, and now we're going back to Perek Dalet to deal with Tumah. Just as an introduction, there are two special dinim by Tumah. Tumah applies to objects that are ochel, that are foods, and they can accept Tumah, and they can transfer Tumah. They can accept Tumah according to most Rishonim, Bekoshu. With any amount, you can accept it. There are some Rishonim that believe that you need a minimum amount of Ochlim Kabetza to accept it. But Rov Rishonim believe in order to accept Tumah, Ochlim could be any amount. To transfer Tumah, to pass on Tumah, they have to be the size of a Kabetza. Kabetza to Ochlim to pass it on. Nevela, which is a higher form of Tumah, you need a Kazayat Basar in order for something to be classified as a Nevela. What happens if you are not at that level? But you have other items that are included. And those other items, which the Mishnah is going to discuss, are something called a shomer and a yad. A shomer is something that protects the item. Something that encapsulates or protects the item, does it have the same status of that item? So for instance, we're going to have in our Mishnah, what happens if you have skin and flesh that are together? The flesh is clearly something that is eaten, is ochel. The skin is something, or is something that is not consumed, and therefore it should not have tumat ochlim. But the skin has an alternative function, which is that it is protecting the basar. It's protecting the ochel. A shomer, something that protects, is also classified or can take on the status of the ochel itself, or a status of an ochel. That's one thing. The other thing is called a yad. A yad means that it's something that is an extension of the item, but you use it to access the item, to carry the item. So for instance, you can have sometimes, what happens if you have a bone that has meat on it? Bone that has meat on it, you would use the bone to hold the meat. That's called a yad. It's something that makes the, or is an extension of the basar, but it's used as a functional item in order to carry or move around the basar. That's something called a yad. But a yad also is able to convey tumah and to accept tumah on behalf of the basar. Since it becomes an extension of the item itself, therefore it takes on the status of the item.
The first Mishnah in Uksin actually gives us a summary of these two principles, and it says, Kol shehu yad velo shomer. Anything that is a functional extension of the ochel, but not a shomer, not a protective encasement, mitamei umitamei. It can accept tumah, and it can convey tumah, velo mitzaref. But it does not add on to the item. It does not become a part of the ochel itself. It does not bring the shear of the ochel to the level that is needed. On the other hand, if you have a shomer, afal pishenu yad. If you have something that is protective of the ochel, encapsulates the ochel, but it's not functional in terms of taking or carrying the item, mitamei umitamei, it accepts tuma, it conveys tuma umitztaref, and then it also joins, it becomes a part or parcel of the ochel itself. And in doing so, it can add up to the necessary kezayit or kebetza that is required in order to have tuma be conveyed in these instances.
That's just a quick introduction to the Mishnah. And we'll get now deep into Tumah and Tahara in the Mishnah and throughout the Perek, which is Haor, the skin. Varotev. A rotev over here is, loosely call it the gravy, but it's really something that is hardened gravy. It's something that when it hardens on the basar, is eaten along with the basar. Vakipah, as Rashi explains here, it's really the sediment in the pot, but it's the spicing and the extras that melaveh that accompany the basar. Ve'alal. The alal here is not defined. The Gemara, as Rashi says, Gemara Mefarish, the Gemara gives two interpretations to what the alal is. One interpretation is it's the leftover pieces of meat that are on the skin. When you flay the animal and take off the skin, it's not always perfect. And there's some little pieces of meat that are left on the, or on that skin. That's one interpretation. The other one is that it's the gidea tzavar. It's the sinews that are found in the neck, or the arteries that are found in the neck. Those are the alal, that's a machloket in the Gemara. Hatzamot, the bones. Vagidim, and the sinews. Verkarnayim, and the horns. Vetalfayim, are the hooves. Mitztarfim, litamei tumat ochlim. They are mitztaref. They are included in order to be tamei tumat ochlim. That means that if I have less than a kebetza over here of basar, we'll pass on tuma if it's the size of a kebetza. These items, even though they're not basar, and they're not ochel, they will be included. They will be added to the measurement of a kebetza. The question of why, and they function in different ways. One reason is because they are eaten along with the basar. Yet even though they themselves alone would not be eaten, when they are together with the meat, they are also eaten, and therefore they take on a status of ochel. So for instance, one example would be the rotev. The rotev would not be eaten alone, but along with the basar, the rotev, this hardened gravy or fat that comes around the meat, you wouldn't eat it by itself, but together with the meat. If you were eating the meat and it was on the meat, you would eat it. So it makes the size of the meat now greater. That's one. The other issue might be something which we spoke about before, which is a shomer. For instance, atzamot. It's a question as to why we're talking about here, atzamot. So Rashi interprets atzamot, sheish ben moach. They have marrow inside of them. The marrow is edible inside the bone. So the marrow has the status of ochel. What about the bone that surrounds the marrow? So Rashi says it's a shomer. It's something that protects the marrow that's inside, and therefore it becomes an extension of the marrow, and it's included in the kebetza. The Rambam, on the other hand, gives it as the example that I said before, which is that the bone is used to hold the meat. The meat's at the end of the bone. And therefore it's an extension of the meat because you use it as a yad for the meat. All of these items and examples in the Mishnah take on one of these two characteristics. Either that they're eaten along with the meat, so ba'or. The or is either protective in nature, or it could be that the or, you have a soft piece of skin that's also with the basar. If it's together, you wouldn't eat it alone, but if it's with the basar, you might eat it also. Possible. Rotev is clearly that way. Rotev, we're talking about something that would be eaten with the basar, but not alone. The kippah and the alau also might be in that category. The atzamot, we just discussed the difference between Rambam and the Rashi. Then the gidim, the sinews, again, would not be eaten alone, but when they're contained within the meat, they might be consumed. The karnayim talfayim, horns and hooves are more difficult. The horns and the hooves, the Gemara will discuss, have to be the soft part. The soft part of the hoof of the horns, where if you cut them, they would bleed. So they have to be soft enough that they would also take on a status of being edible. Otherwise, it's meaningless. You can't have a horn that becomes tamei because a horn is a hard bone which doesn't have a din of tumah.
It doesn't matter whether it's a shomer or yad. The rules are
here, yes. That's not true in all cases. A yad and a shomer have different dinim in different places. But right now, for what we're concerned with, they're functioning the same way. Right, the Gemara is going to ask that question in just a little bit. But yes, as of right now, we're not going to concern ourselves with that. Now, the Gemara says, that's true of tumat ochlim, avalo tumat nevelot. That's not true by nevela. Because by a nevela, we'll see this in the Gemara, the only thing that is restricted in nevela is basar. The basar has to be, you have to have a kezayit basar nevela. Nothing else has a classification in nevela besides the kezayit basar. So kiyot zibbo, they have the same thing. Hashuchet beima tmea lo'ovid kochavim. So now, as Rashi points out, this is dafka. Everything mentioned here is dafka. So it's dafka Yisrael, it's dafka Jew that's doing it here. Dafka shchita, and he's doing a shchita. It's dafka a behema tmea, non-kosher animal. And dafka is doing it for a non-Jew. If all of those are true, umifar keset. After he shechs it, the animal is still flopping around. It's still shaking. Mitama tumat ochlim. So when it comes to tumat nevela only applies once the animal is dead, completely dead. Nevela is only true when you're not alive anymore. If you're flopping around, you are still quote-unquote alive, and therefore you don't have a din of nevela. But when it comes to tumat ochlim take on a status once it's mutar to eat it. But when is it mutar to eat it? That we saw earlier in the Masechta. It's a difference between a Jew and a non-Jew. By a Jew, the matir is shchita. Shchita is matir the animal to be eaten, even if it's still flopping around. On the other hand, for a ben noach, the only time you're allowed to eat meat is when it's dead. It has to be completely dead. They don't have shchita. They don't have a din of shchita. Now over here, you have an interesting case. You have a Jew who's coming along and doing shchita on a non-kosher animal for a non-Jew. So for a Jew, shchita is the end of the line. That's when something takes on a status of ochel, is once you did shchita on it. But over here, it's a non-kosher animal. So he's not gonna eat it. But since it's a Jew that is doing it for a non-Jew, therefore we say that the animal takes on a status of ochel after the shchita, even though it's not permissible to eat it. Even though it's not permissible to eat it, since shchita in other places functions that way, therefore, over here, it'll take on that nature. You can see this in Rashi. Rashi says, Dafka Yisrael, Dafka Shchita, Dafka Tmeya, V'Dafka Lo'Ved Kuchavim. It has to have all four of these items. Because Yisrael Sheshachat Be'ima Tmeya L'Tzorech Lo'Ved Kuchavim, V'Odah Mefarkeset, and it's still flopping around. Afagav D'Lo Chazi Lo'Ved Kuchavim. The non-Jew can't eat it yet. Until it's dead, he's not permitted to eat it. Nevertheless, the meat Talia Milto L'Bnei Noach. For B'nei Noach to consume meat, it has to be dead. V'Lo Shari Lo'Hu Shchita Ad Shitamot. And the Shchita doesn't make it mutar to eat until it's dead. Since the Jew did it, it becomes a good shchita. And by a Jew we know that shchita sharia the gabei b'tohara. That by a kosher animal, shchita is the matir. That's what we had earlier in the Masechta. If it works for a Jew, then in Ochanam it should work for a non-Jew. We had amigo there. Amigo that it works for the Jew, it would also work for the non-Jew. How could it be that a ben noach is more chamor than a Jew? But then by a kosher animal, if it's shchita works, then it works for the non-Jew as well. But over here we're talking about a behemat tmeah. Hilkach. Mishavya le machshavato uchla b'shchita. His machshava will make it into an ochel, a status of food, with the shchita. Af b'tmeah l'oved kochavim. Even for a non-kosher animal for a non-Jew. Aval. If it was a case of an oved kochavim, if it was a case of an oved kochavim b'shchita, lo mishavya le machshavato uchla. If a non-Jew does it, Doloshkan Shchita Gabe. If a non-Jew did the Shchita, it doesn't work. Because Shchita is not applicable for a non-Jew. He doesn't have any din of Shchita, so it won't work. V'chein Yisrael b'nechira. If a Jew did it through just cutting open the animal and killing the animal, then la'avochla m'shavila. It doesn't have this special status of the Shchita. Doloshkan Nechira Gabe. Because we don't find the Nechira. And what happens if he shechted it for a Jew? Rashi said at the end, V'tmei al Yisrael, lo m'shavila uchla debetela makshavato. If he's shechting it for a Jew, then we say that his dat is batel to every other Jew. Jews don't eat. Behemot meot. So therefore it's not applicable. So that's why Rashi says it's dafka, this setup. We have a Jew shechting a non-kosher animal for a non-Jew. You have this unusual circumstance, which will be an interim status. The interim status is that it attains the status of ochel after the shechita, but doesn't become an avela until the time that it's dead. So that's another difference between tumat ochlim and tumat nevelot. Aval lo tumat nevelot ad shetamut, until it dies, o ad sheyatziz et rosha. If he severs the head in one shot, then it's what's called a gistera, and a gistera becomes automatically an avela immediately because the severing of the head makes it dead on arrival. Yeah, that's it. It's dead right away. Riba l'tamei tumat ochlim, mimash riba l'tamei tumat nevelot. There's a larger amount of tumat ochlim than there is tumat nevelot, which we just explained in our Mishnah. That the tumah of Uchlim has a larger part of tumah to be lot. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ha'alal. This goes back to what we mentioned earlier in the Mishnah, that the alal ha'mikunas, then you have basar, if you have basar on a piece of skin, which as we mentioned before, he says over here, alal mikunas, im yeshbo kezayit v'makum echad, chayav alav. If you have this leftover basar that's on this piece of skin, then if you have it in one location, you actually can get to a kezayit basar, then it will have tumat nevelot. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Obviously the Chachamim disagree and say that Allah will never attain the status of tumat nevela because it's not a kezayit basar, but he says that the or is able to be mitzdareif, bring them together to be a single piece. Right now, tanina alahad etan rabbanan. We now have a Mishnah that corroborates a principle that's laid out by the Chachamim. What's that principle? Shomrim l'tumah kala, v'lo shomrim l'tumah chamura. A shomer will become an extension of an item when we're dealing with light forms of tumah. That will not be true when we're dealing with heavier forms of tumah. And what's that? That's it. Shomrim l'tumah kala minolan. How do we know that a shell or protective encasement or a shell will also be an extension of the item itself? How do we know that? Titana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel. Shaul teaches us the pasuk. It says, "Al kol zerezerua asher yizareya." Now, truthfully, this pasuk is talking about something that's still tahor, but any item that can be planted, seed or food, and over there it talks about that it has to have mayim, water on it. When water is poured on it, then it's mukshar lekabel tumah, can accept tumah. When we're talking about a seed that is planted, kederach shemnei adam motziim lizriya. When you take out a seed to be planted, chita biklipata. You take out the wheat kernel with its shell on it. Usora biklipata. You take out the barley kernel with its shell on it. Vadashim biklipata. And you also take out the lentils with their shell on them. So you see that, like the way it's planted, that has a status of ochel. Well, like the status of ochel means even with the shell on it. Now Rashi points out there are two shells that we can be talking about here. There's a very thin shell that is found on them. That is edible. That's not what we're talking about. That has the status of ochel by itself because it's edible. There is a shell that they're talking about is when it's in the shibolet, when it's still on the shaft, when it's still in the actual husk that is found in the growing process. That's the klipa that we're talking about here. Something that's not otherwise edible, but is a shomer. So over here by tumah kala, we see that an ochel that would accept tumah, also it's shomer. The protective casing also accepts tumah. So that's the din that we learned out. Our Mishnah mentions that. Number two is, but when it comes to tumah chamura, v'lo shomrim l'tumah chamura minolan, how do we know by tumah chamura that doesn't apply? The Tanur Banan. Min nevelata v'lo ba'or. Shein alav kezayit basar. So nevela only applies to nevela, the basar of the nevela, and not to the or, not to the skin that doesn't have a kezayit basar on it. Nevela only applies to kezayit basar, not to the skin of the nevela.
So you pick up a dead cow, drag it.
Oh, so the Gemara asks you a question. Yochol anogea kineged basar miacharav. So I would think that if I had a kezayit basar on the other side of the ore, that you wouldn't be tamei. Lo yehei tamei. According to what you're saying now, the ore acts as a shomer; it's a protective encasement. Therefore, I can only become tamei if I come in contact with the basar, not with the ore. So that's what Moni is asking over here. Wait a minute. What happens if I go and drag a dead carcass? I'm not going to become Tamei. That's not true. So Tamad Omar Yitma, that you will become Tamei. My Kamar. What's going on here? So Amar Rava. Rava explains this. Some say without any attribution to Rava, or we saw earlier in the Masechta, it could be Kadi was a name of a Chacham, but more likely the explanation here means it's without attribution. Chasurei Meksura. It's missing words, this limud. This is what it means. The only thing you're chayav by nevela is for the basar and nevela, and not the skin that only has less than a kazayit basar. So if you have less than a kazayit basar, and the or, the skin, makes it into a kazayit, no nevela. Even though by tumat ochlim it would be the case, by nevela not. That's the difference between tumah chamura. Nevela is a tumah chamura, whereas tumat ochlim is a tumah kala. By tumah kala, we include the shomer, we include the additional item to add up to the number you need, or whatever the minimum shear is. By nevela, the or does not add up. And that or brings it up to the level of kazayit. That doesn't apply. Roni's question. Case where I have a skin with a kazayit basar on it. What happens if I touch the skin on the other side over here? I would think you're not tamei. And this doesn't function like a yad. Tamal Omar, Yitma. The pasuk tells us Yitma, and that comes to answer your question. There's a difference between a shomer and a yad. When it's functioning as a shomer, it cannot be added to the ochel to make it into the kazayit minimum shear. But if I have a kazayit basar on the other side, then I don't need the shomer anymore. The shomer is no longer relevant because I have a full tuma on the other side. But because it's relevant, it's a yad. It becomes something that is a vehicle for moving that item. Becomes an extension, not because it's a protective encasement, but because it's the handle for that item. And therefore, if I'm dragging the carcass, I have a kazayit mazar nevela on the inside, the or is a yad to that basar, and therefore it conveys tuma as a yad, not as a shomer. And that's what it comes to teach us. It can function as both, but it only have meaning by nevela. A yad can extend or convey the tumat nevela. A shomer,
it's just a piece of flesh and meat, and I just touch the ore on the outside. I'm not using it as a yad. It's not really a yad. It's just a...
Right, the example Rashi gives, he doesn't use ore as the example. He uses etzim as the example, like we did in the Mishnah. What the Rambam calls in the Mishnah, he uses that example. If you have a bone with a piece of kazayit nevela on the end of it, and how do you hold the kazayit basar? You take it up under the...
And what about with the wheat husk, the barley husk? If they were tamei, right. You had the whole thing, and then someone separated out the kernels from the husks, and you just touched the husks with the kernels, so then you are tamei, as long as you have
kazayit. Well, yeah, but food can't make a person tamei, but the person could make the ochel tamei.
Yeah,
so the person could make ochel tamei through the husk, because the ochel
has the same injection
as the ochel.
Always, whether they're attached or not.
No, if you detach, then they lose that status. Detached, they're no longer ochel. They're only valuable when they're on top of the item. And on the item, they're a shomer to that item, they can convey the tumah, you can convey the tumah through the husks. But if they're separated, then the husks are meaningless, they're not ochel. We'll stop over here.